could. I'll cut the mic.
Hello, and welcome to recording number 3 of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is October 15th, 2021. Last time we saw Enver Zig, Bord, and Chert. They'd found a secret entrance, and low even that of the secret entrance that Enver Zig had led them to. And here they encounter a person or creature or entity called the Element Master. Now, at this point, things get a little bit surreal with that. And here they travel either to an alternate plane or outside of the castle or even an illusion. And it ends up where they go from the depths of Castle Greyhawk to where they are outside. And even with the Element Master there, they even transform where they are outside into this kind of arena. And then they're confronted with these challenges. And the challenges are these three different creatures that they have to fight. Chert takes on a creature of strength, an Aurochs bull. And Gord is attacked by a cobra. And Enver Zig is attacked by a rock, the gigantic bird. And I don't know how those balance out, but, you know, it seems like Chert versus the bull and Gord versus the cobra are kind of almost of their nature. The rock and Enver Zig is kind of out of place, I think. But and it is the cover of Knight Errant is there is Enver Zig in the clutches of the giant rock. All right, so I'm going to begin here. We are on page 30 and the second paragraph down from the top. The cobra was readying itself to spit again. Desperately, Gord took aim and hurled his long dagger, but the monstrous reptile weaved its head at that moment, so the blade failed to take it full in its gaping mouth. Instead, the dagger's edge passed along the snake's skull, not piercing it, but slicing the thing's eye. Hissing in pain, the cobra struck, knowing that being blind on one side would assure its death. Gord was nearly taken by the sudden attack, for he'd been poised to counter a venomous missile when the strike came instead. He managed to bat the cobra's head aside with the flat of his sword, then darted ahead among the huge reptile's coils. Once, twice, the short sword slashed. Then Gord was beyond the writhing body. The cobra slithered so as to come at him again, and Gord decided that he had to get to close quarters quickly. He leapt to attack again, blade pointed ahead. The cobra reared higher, pulling its head back. Gord was on its blind side now, and wasting no time, he jumped at the opportunity to finish the creature. Gord's blade struck upward. The tip went through the cobra's lower jaw from below, pierced its mouth, sliced its brain, and protruded from the reptile's thick skull in one smooth plunge. The snake thrashed in its death throes, and Gord, utterly exhausted, stood by and watched till it died. Then he wasted no time in rushing to his friend's side. The bull sent Chert flying with a sideways kick, but the barbarian managed to hang on to Brule. A bit came free, and Chert was ready and waiting for the Aurochs when it charged again. This time he stood squarely in the huge animal's path as it bellowed and snorted in its charge. The great axe was above the hillman's head as the bull approached. In a blur of motion, Brule flashed down and split the heaviest portion of the Aurochs' skull, pole and pass clean through in the process. The animal's momentum continued, dead on its feet as it was. Gord screamed a warning as the charging beast struck Chert, flung him backwards, and parted man from axe once again. Then the aurochs crashed to the blood-splattered grass, kicked convulsively, and finally lay still. "Are you all right?" Gord asked, rushing over to where his friend lay like a heap of bloody rags. Chert's eyes were closed, and he seemed lifeless. "Oh, Chert," Gord moaned, dropping beside his bulky friend. "If only I'd refused that dastardly wizard's proposal in the first place, you'd still be alive." Gord was beside himself with grief and guilt. He allowed his head to fall on his friend's chest, and the sobs came freely. "Hey, don't drown me," Chert's eyelids snapped open suddenly. The barbarian flashed a mischievous grin. "Fooled you, but I'm happy to hear you'd miss me if I were ever to depart from this very strange plane." Obviously, the barbarian was battered and bruised, and the gouge on his left leg trickled gore, but his wounds were definitely not fatal. "Buffoon, you scared me out of a year," Gord said in disgust as he stood quickly, the back of his hand attempting to wipe away any telltale signs of premature mourning. Then he added in as disgusted a tone as he could muster, a hard task since he was feeling nothing but relief. "Well, I see you didn't get off without some pain, at least, and I say it serves you right. Anyone who'd pull a nasty prank like the one you just pulled on me deserves to suffer," Gord said with mock severity. "A cobra wasn't too much for you, I see," Chert remarked, ignoring Gord's lecture. "Piece of pie, snake pie," Gord said with a smug grin. "I'll bind your leg, and then you can help me find my dagger." The thief's voice trailed off then, because a resounding screech from the rock reminded him that the wizard was still in jeopardy. "Balls, Gord, that bird's gonna finish Enverzig in a moment, unless we do something fast." Now it was Chert's turn to panic. "Well, what are you waiting for?" Gord called over his shoulder as he trotted toward the struggling wizard. "Don't stand there gawking. Come on." The young thief made it there before the hobbling Chert could come anywhere near. Gord Short, sir, it was a puny pin against a creature with a wingspread of more than 60 feet and strength sufficient to lift an elephant. Nonetheless, the bold adventurer rushed ahead and hacked at the rock's tail. The blade severed monstrous feathers and must have cut the bird's skin as well. It squawked mightily again, pivoted on its encaging left foot, and glared at Gord. "Oh, shit! The explanation rose unbidden to his throat as Gord saw that the rock was now intent on snapping him in twain with its huge beak. Just at that moment, Chert, limping along as quickly as he could, finally joined the group, and the rock was distracted for a crucial instant. Enverzig had been left alone long enough to recover his breath, gather his wits, and cast a spell. With a courage born of desperation, the wizard completed his demon crafting and grabbed fast to the nearest huge talon of the monstrous bird. One instant, the glaring eye of the rock glittered menacingly at Gord as the bird's neck approached. The next, feathers were a uniform gray, eye stony, and talons calcareous. "Run, Gord!" Gord took Chert's shouted warning to heart, scampering away as fast as he could. The petrified bird was toppling over with majestic slowness, but the pull of gravity would soon cause the fall to quicken. If Gord were anywhere under the thing, there would be nothing left of him but a smear on the ground. The crash of petrified bird upon the earth made the ground shake. "Wow, I'll second that, Chert." "Good," a dry voice said, breaking their awed reverie. "I see that you two have managed to handle your lesser challenges well enough, although I deplore the condition you both appear to be in. Tend to yourselves immediately, while I settle matters with the Element Master," Anivir Zig ordered. "How about a thank you?" Gord asked, amazed at the lack of gratitude on the part of the wizard. A break. Now, it does appear that this seems to be some kind of flesh-to-stone spell, and quite a powerful one that would be able to take down as big a Hittai monster as a rock. This is first edition, so it may not be as big a creature as it eventually ends up as. But still, now there is a statue spell, and it's hard to tell. Now, it's a touch spell. Magic user or other creature is apparently turned to solid stone. It's 7 segments, and the duration is quite long at 6 turns per level. Now, the creature, a 7th level spell, so yeah, a majorly powerful spell. And it's hinted at that Enver Zig should be quite powerful, but, it's very hard to tell in this so far. We have seen him use the device that allows them to sink through the stone. And he had to concentrate while doing it, but it doesn't mean that device that really seemed to me to be part of the dungeon rather than a magical spell that was being cast by Enver Zig. All right. I am going to restart. It's page 33, and we're on the 4th paragraph from the end. "Duty carried out deserves no praise, nor any thanks. It is duty," the wizard said with no hint of emotion. "Come on, chum, help me with this bandage," Chert said. "No sense in starting a quarrel with him now." Both adventurers were in fair shape when the wizard came stumping back with the Element Master. "I told you, these two need not be bothered in this matter," he said crossly to the druid-like figure. "Nonsense, little wizard. They passed their tests, and now I must inform each of his personal options. You have these choices as well, but you cannot speak for these other two. Each is free to decide for himself." Lips compressed, Enver Zig stood back and watched the Element Master address the two young men. Having won fairly, you each are entitled to select one of the two following options. You may accept a prize that I will bestow upon you, and then return the way you came. Or you may opt to go from here without any reward, save such passage. The choice is yours. Of course, there was no real choice, although both men considered the aspect of the final option. Treasure in return would be useless, for the way back was unknown to them. "They had to press on. I told you so," the wizard said smugly, as the Element Master heard the two young adventurers opt for going ahead. The tall man shrugged, spread his arms, and the light was gone. The three were The three were in a tunnel that sloped gently downward. Behind him, behind them, a cavern was obscured by alternating colors and conditions. Now for the Lord of Balance, Enervig Zig said almost gleefully as he rubbed his long hands together briskly. Soon enough, they came to the place where the personage was ensconced. That was evident from the nature of the cavern. The sign of the balance was only one indication, and a huge metal scale before them another. The cavern was half-lighted, half-dark. Flames shot from a pool, but the fire burned in only half of the basin. For the other portion was crystal clear, placid water. Ord saw that it was so crystalline and still because it was solid ice. Everything else seemed to contradict something as well. Lush grass sprang from barren rock, while dead plants thrust up from rich, dark soil. Colorless trees were bedecked with a riotous array of blossoms of all hues. Only one such tree had tiny ones. Another huge petaled blooms. Ugly and beautiful, delicate and coarse, wholesome and poisonous, soft and hard, wet and dry, male and female, tall and dark, and every other sort of contrast was everywhere, and nowhere at the same time, it seemed. Welcome, strangers. Why come to the place of Yang Yin? The wizard stepped forward. Hands raised, palms outward and before him. I recognize you, Lord of Balance, Master Yang Yin, he intoned. I demand passage through this place. And what of me? The soprano voice cried. I recognize you, Lady of Balance, Mistress Yin Yang. I beg leave to pass through your realm. Enter, the male voice commanded. Stay out, the female voice countered. Break. So, here we get to, again, another surreal little place here. It's a very basic opposites, yin and yang, yang and yin. And unfortunately, the way it's cast is that, the way it's depicted here, is that the opposites contradict each other. So, you know, one says go, the other says stay. It's a bit of, Gygax really had a favor for this kind of surrealism. It seems more like storybook than like a Swiftian farce. So, it's pretty simple stuff here, and it does show you what you could kind of expect from that original Castle Greyhawk campaign. Nothing to my taste, but really, I as some people don't mind this kind of farce and humor thrown into their adventure. I find the farce a little too much myself. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 35, and the eighth paragraph down from the top. Gord peered left and right, but he could detect no one. Gert was likewise looking for speakers with the same result. Enervir Zig seemed untroubled, however, and marched into its strange marked into the strange place without hesitation. Again, the two young adventurers had no choice but to follow. After walking for what seemed like an hour, they came to a place that was the center of the cavern. There suddenly appeared before them two figures. One, a male of purest white color, the other, a female of pure black. The wizard bowed slightly, and Gorn and Shur hastened to follow suit. "Will you pay our price?" the male figure said. "We will and will not," the wizard replied. "Good," said the female. "Bad," the wizard cried in answer. "Who will serve as the contestant?" Master Yang Yin demanded. Jennifer Zig was ready. "No, he on my right, big. He on my left, small. Who will contest for our passage?" Now I see why the combination of Chert and Gord was chosen for this mission. The small thief whispered to his huge friend, "I guess we're what you'd call in balance." "One will live," the man said, looking at Chert and looking at Chert as he spoke. "One will die," the ebony female announced in a sultry tone, as she gazed at Gord. "That is in fate's hands," the wizard countered. "Balance." At that, both figures scowled, for the words of the spellbinder were a counter to their pronouncements. Then they smiled. The white male figure turned without speaking and beckoned them to follow, while the black female slipped among the three and spoke. All right. "It is seldom indeed that strangers enter our realm through this portal," seductive Lady Yin Yang purred. "It is often," her male counterpart snapped in disagreement. The lady ignored his rebuff. "May I suffer hospitality and assistance?" Gord quickly took the initiative. "No, we do not ask for your weal, for then he would counter with woe," the young thief said, pointing to the pale Lord Yang Yin. Chur immediately caught his friend's meaning. "Nor do we want your assistance, Dark Mistress, for then the White Lord would surely do his equal best to hinder us." Making a move of disappointment, Lady Yang gave a shrug and tempered, and turned away from them at the barbarian's rejection. Snow What Yang in continuity. Snow White Yang, in contrast, turned and came to them, a look of gratification on his face. The two young adventurers had the meanings of this place, had the measure of this place now. "Let's get on with the challenge," Enver Zig said. The two rulers of the place looked at each other. "Dead to contest with the living?" asked Luna. Asked Lady Yin. "No, these men are too strong for such puny opposition." "Actually," Lady Yin said, visually assessing Gordon Chert, "they're too weak." "Allow me a moment to consider," replied Lord Yang. "I won't consider it at all," Yin said in a definitive tone. "Do as you wish," the wizard said forcefully. "We are going." With that, the gray-locked fellow strode off, his rusty black robe swiveling, robe swishing. Bord and Chert were more than willing to follow him, so all three marched away toward the place where they supposed the exit to the cavern lay. So more break here. So more indication of how this contest goes with this throwing back of opposites, and very much kind of an Alice in Wonderland. And you know, Gygax was known for doing the Alice in Wonderland adventures, so that in Castle Greyhawk at one point, the characters come out and have to deal with Alice in Wonderland, and not a very popular pair of adventures there. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 37, and it is 7 paragraphs from the end. All right. "We shall join you, yes," asked Yang. "Sure," Chert told the two. "Come along." "No, we'll manage ourselves," Gord said almost simultaneously. Balance, Zig noted without expression. Lord and Lady stared hard at all three of their guests. "We will go along all the same," Yang said. "Speak for yourself. I will stay," Lady Yin said. It had taken an hour to walk to the midpoint of the Hemi Plain that the cavern represented, but the trek across the remainder took only a minute. Of course, it was disturbing because they seemed to be traveling no faster, yet the terrain slid past. All right. Slid past on either side as if they rode the swiftest of coursers. Very soon they were at a place where a dark arch showed where a tunnel must run, a gently sloping passage going through solid stone, leading down and elsewhere. Break. Now, the thing is, we're getting a little physical description, but it just doesn't matter. They've already left Castle Greyhawk. They may be back in it or not, but it's already been shown that it isn't really a solid place as much, you know, as a portal or an illusory place where they're in a very surreal setting where they can change from being outside as they were with the Element Master to inside. And back into tunnels and arches. There's really no physicality that's dependable in the story as presented. So it's it changes either by something set or by the will of the people they encounter, or for some reason that they're generating themselves. I'm going to restart page 38 and the beginning of page, the first paragraph. "This has been somewhat disappointing," Yang confessed, "but there is one bright ray of sunlight peeking through this otherwise cloudy encounter." Yang smiled and continued, "There is still the matter of balances yet to be made. Strangers, who will now go back to balance your going ahead?" "You will," Gord shot back at the pale man without thinking. A male cry of rage and a female laugh of delight faded away in the distance as Lord Yang was magically sent back along the path the adventurers had followed. Lady Yin's mocking laughter could be heard all the way through the cavern. There are powers beyond them which even Yang and Yin must obey, Wizard said with a barking laugh, "and a good thing it was you stumbled upon the counter to Yang's plan, too, a thief. I was fearful that they would have us contest with undead, balance between life and death. Of course, that is why I left so quickly. By rushing them, we managed to thwart that possibility. But Yang decided to accompany us to see if we'd make some slip along the way. Then he laughed again. Now I know why, although I must admit, I didn't have it figured out until you had already acted on our behalf. I had dared hope. The wizard was obviously delighted. Acted on our behalf, thief. You're turning out to be much more help than I had dared hope. The wizard was obviously delighted. How did Yang's going back balance our going on? Chert inquired, as they moved along the hand-hewn passageway. Enverzig stopped his harsh chuckling. The smile still showed on his gaunt features. Fool, you think one of us alone is enough to counter either of those two powerful creatures? Enverzig asked derisively. Since Lady Yin chose to stay behind, although she did so to maintain balance, she actually threw it off just enough to allow us to escape. Apparently, the three of us going far are equal to one of them going back but a little. Balance was maintained. All right, but not the way Yang and Yin intended it to be. With that, the wizard burst into uproarious laughter. As they approached yet another cavern, Kurt stopped and demanded of Enverzig, where are the treasures you told us would be ours? So far, we've been lucky to escape with our lives, and there isn't a jot of treasure to show for it. Knowledge is an unsurpassed treasure, barbarian. Consider how much you have learned in the course of this quest. Yes, we have learned never to trust you again. Trust spellbinders, Gord murmured to his friend. That piece of knowledge alone will profit us in the end. If we live to escape this place. Yes, we have... Chert hefted his big battle axe and eyed the wizard. Stop that doltishness, Zig commanded. It will gain us nothing. Besides, if my information is correct, there will be material rewards for us ahead. So let us stop this idle banter and progress. Thus, what does lie ahead, Zig Gord asked. The cavern ahead is an extension of the realm of thought. And the final obstacle between me and my heart's desire. Once through, we'll be ready to delve to the depths where it lies. Now follow. The cavern was a formless place where colors and shapes kept wavering and changing. Nothing remained stable, and it was impossible to determine directions once the three had gone beyond the place where they could see the mouth of the passage they had entered from. Soon it seemed evident that they were wandering aimlessly. Great. All right, so they're in the castle or they're not in the castle. And it's not like a normal dungeon crawl. It's become really just like a theater of the mind here, because what they're encountering is still this cavern is now has this wavering of colors and shapes. Changing. Nothing is stable. So they're in a very chaotic element rather than the solidity of some kind of castle dungeon. And that is, I think, one of the keys to Castle Greyhawk, is that it is it is a very chaotic environment. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 39 and the final paragraph. "This is not what I expected," Enver said crossly. "I must ponder a moment," he added. And with that, he sat down. Both young men were surprised to see that the wizard rested on an ornately carved chair inscribed with mystic sigils. "The chair," Gord said aloud. "I sit on my special chair, nothing more. How can I think if my chair?" Zig leaped up and stared. The seat had vanished even as he rose. "It was there an instant ago," Chirp volunteered. "Of course, thought is the answer. I thought of thinking, and to think, I usually seat myself in the very armchair that appeared, so my strongest mental image was unconsciously that of the seat. The chair popped back into existence. Which means, guard carefully all thoughts, thief, and you too, barbarian. This area is attuned to images of the mind, and carelessness can be deadly. Resume your usual vacuous attitudes, and we will have no such difficulties. Meanwhile, I shall intelligently experiment and find the wherewithal to defeat this obstacle to my path." What the wizard commanded brought the opposite results, naturally, as both Gord's and Chirp's minds considered the possibilities. First, a huge chest filled with gold and jewelry appeared at Gord's feet. This size gemstones and glittering platinum pieces cascaded from the coffer to roll and clatter among his boots. Then suddenly, rising from the mound of treasure, came the hideous visage of some demonic guardian, smoking forth and assuming corporeal form. There was a female cry from behind Gord, and when he turned, a beautiful half-elven girl was there, and at her throat, her face a mask of fear. "Save me from Monster Gord," she begged. Heavily, the young thief exclaimed, spinning around in a full circle, so as to face the demon again, now with his sword and dagger in hand. All right, break. And so, yeah, it is kind of like the Hall of Mirrors at Coney Island. And so anything they're thinking of starts to appear. You know, they did that in an episode of the comedy show Red Dwarf, where they had a game called Better Than Life, and they could imagine anything they want, only the one character just can't imagine anything positive, so it becomes this torturous place for them. So, and then, of course, we had this Star Trek episode where what they thought on the entertainment planet became real. So here we are back in time, because this is Gord and Chirp after Saga of Old City, and Gord's mind is still wrapped up with thoughts of Evelie, the half-elven daughter of Count Dunstan Blamu up in Nurl, who betrayed Gord, but she was one of his first loves there. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 41 and the second paragraph down from the top. At the same time, there appeared before Chur a trio of armored men. Iridians by their dress and armor, cavaliers by bearing and words. "We guard the Overking's jewels, and no filthy barbarian from the Flinty Hills can take them from us." The middle one, Boom, drawing a bastard sword as he spoke. His companions did likewise. But then, two other hulking figures, both only slightly smaller than Chert himself, stepped forward to oppose them. It was to be an even contest. Three axes against three swords. Barbarian fellow... Again, barbarian hillmen fighting armored knights of Erdi. Wild-looking buxom women cheered on Chert and his two fellow hillmen, while sneering nobles in regal finery sat behind their cavaliers and urged them to slay their foes. A pack of shaggy hounds snarled and snapped at leather-mailed warriors, at leather-mailed war dogs belonging to the civilized foemen, whose pavilion showed banners and many hues and various devices. Around these tents swirled a battle between a swarm of hillmen with bows, spears, and axes, who sought to overcome a well-formed company of uniformed footmen protecting a squadron of mounted cavaliers. Both sides seemed to be calling for reinforcements, and wild shouts, trumpets, and bellowing war horns sounded in the distance. "Stop! Are you demented?" Somehow the shout managed to draw Gord's attention from his life-and-death battle with the horrible demon. He spun to see who was speaking thus. Chert, too, left off his battle with the plated knight in an attempt to determine who would dare to interfere with this contest. Both young adventurers stared at Enver Zig, glanced back at them. Three were alone. "Look at me. Listen to me," the wizard ordered tonelessly. "What? No, do not speak. Just listen. Both of you were creating things with your thoughts. Thoughts you were not to have. All of these phantoms are gone now, but they can return. They can do real damage if your minds give them form, substance, and power. This place is a death trap for the unwary. The untrained, undisciplined minds have no hope of survival. Thank your lucky stars that I'm with you." Now, Enver Zig said, looking at each in turn. "Can you count?" "Of course," Gord said with irritation. "And you?" Chert shot back, equally offended. "Excellent thief, you count backwards from 1,000. Hillman, you count as high as you can. Use your fingers for all I care, and start again at the beginning when you can go no further. And both of you do your counting silently." The wizard seated himself in his strange chair again, as the two young adventurers complied with his instructions. Zig's face was a study of concentration. Brow furrowed, eyes narrowed, hands locked on the arms of his seat. Gord was still counting backward when he noticed a faint rocking motion underfoot. 779. 778, he murmured under his breath as he carefully looked around to find the cause of the tremors. It took several moments, but then he finally comprehended the situation. They were on the vast, moss-covered back of the largest turtle ever known. The monster was slowly plodding through the swirling void, toward some unguessable destination. While still counting in his mind, Gord managed to query the wizard, "This great turtle, why ponder it into existence?" Cease your jabbering and clear your mind of all save the numbers you count, Enver Zig said, without looking at Gord. There is a lake we must cross, so this terrapin will take us there, for he senses water. 15, water? Kurt asked aloud. Just after he spoke, Gord noticed a distinct difference in the motion underfoot. A critter this size will need a big, big pond, the barbarian said with a chortle. Ziggs nearly turned purple with rage. You idiot, he spat. And then he managed to control himself. The black lightning shot cloud that had formed over Chert's head vanished, and the turtle's bark solidified again. Do you think, you bumbling barbarian, Enver begun, obviously having to make an effort to keep his rage under control, that it would be possible for you to keep your stupid thoughts to yourself? Gord, sure, but can I share a few intelligent ones with you? Kurt spat back sarcastically. Just count, Enver screamed, screeched the command. No, Gord, I think he'd be a lot better company if only. Don't think, both Gord and the wizard yelled at once. Okay, okay. Don't mind need to tell me twice. Kurt said in a lightly optimized tone, the tone of voice. He resumed his counting. Seemingly long time later, Gord again sensed a change in movement. In motion. This time the young thief noticed they had reached the verge of the formless realm of thought and were embarked on a vast expanse of true water. Monstrous turtle swimming stoically upon its placid surface. Unfortunately, Kurt had noticed the change too. Sure. Hey! What if this old mossback decides to dive? Oh no, stop! It was too late. Even as Enver Zig attempted to right the situation, Big Hillman's thoughts took over. Simple, strong thought proved more powerful than the mental images from the complicated mindset of the wizard. The three found themselves immersed, sinking. Then they were just as suddenly aloft again. Each riding an air-filled bladder as it mounted on a horse, as if mounted on a horse. Water around them began to bubble, and a dark shape began to rise towards them from far beneath the surface. That doesn't look like our turtle, Chur observed with consternation in his voice. Stopping hells, Gord shouted, tipping in his precarious seat upon the floating bag as he saw a terrible sea monster coming at them with jaws agape. Ladders vanished instantly, and so, and all three were sitting instead on a huge square of solid iron. Of course it sank. Enver Zig quickly set his mind on an image of a wooden platform, and the three were soon floating on it. The raft was big, and its deck was awash, but at least the three were not dunked a second time. Both the iron slab and the ravening monster monster of the deeps had vanished. Gord, feeling confident, Now envisioned a solid line of wooden planks surrounding the edges of the raft. Box-like work to keep the foot, to keep the water from lapping across the planks. Instead, planks underfoot, pardon me. Let's see. The latter he imagined as dry as he thought of the bulwarks. Sure enough, they were now floating in a huge rectangular tray, Armin stripping on a dry deck of solid oak. Not bad, Enver Zig admitted grudgingly. Both of you go back to counting again. I'll see that we get across. Giant seahorses yoked as a team appeared and began hauling the heavy box, boxy barge ahead. Not bad yourself, Gord returned the compliment. Before Enver had a chance to acknowledge it, mermaids of most beautiful face and form appeared on the backs of the creatures. Who did that? The wizard demanded angrily. The burdened seahorses could now barely make headway. Kurt looked sheepish. Sorry, he said, but those things made me remember the stories I'd heard. Just count, Zig said with resignation. One, the barbarian said, and the mermaids were gone. Rocky hill was now visible, and a wide beach of black sand could be seen before the precipice. The seahorses were hauling them toward this place with strong motion. In a few minutes, three would be clear of the realms, the clear of the realm of thought, and heading toward Enver Zig's goal, whatever that was. The wizard was elated, and he exclaimed with satisfaction, "Only a handful of assorted monsters stand between us and the ebon well now. Be ready to fight stoutly when we land, for I believe that Eris, the fish-hooded demon, will be lurking near the tunnel we approach." All right, break. That Bokaharis, the fish-headed demon, is probably one of the more solid bits of lore we get from this story so far. Especially because since this is all a realm of thought, realm of imagination that we have now in Castle Greyhawk, and almost anything can happen. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 45, third paragraph from the bottom. Kurt Gord hissed at his comrade. When you reach 7, think of the most precious thing you can. 4, okay. Gord knew now how they could get away from this awful place and safely back, and better yet, had figured out how to accomplish that and managed to garner some reward as well. Chert would be responsible for the last part of the task. As far as the wizard went, Enver Zig could fight the lurking daemon with his magic. Gord and the barbarian would be long gone. Fixing his mind and forming his thoughts carefully, Gord listened with half a mind to the hillman slowly say 7. As Chert spoke the number, the young thief set his thoughts firmly. Clumsy barge grounded on the black sand. Enver Zig had dispelled the seahorse team a moment before, and the momentum of their work did the rest. Now you may think freely, if you can, the wizard called to his two associates. We have passed the realm of thought, and my price is all. My prize is all but one. Only the waiting Bokris, Toothy Maw agape, was there to hear the wizard speak. However, Gord and Chert had vanished. It, Gord exclaimed in triumph. Was standing on the weed-grown paves of the ruined courtyard of Castle Greyhawk. Had hoped he was right. Until now, the young thief hadn't been certain of envisioning this place and wishing Churton himself there would actually work. It had. Now he and the massive hillman could tramp safely back to the city, out of the nightmarish realms hidden beneath the castle, with their spoils to be divided. "Okay, Churt," he said, without looking round, as he heard the barbarian exclaim with glee, at where they now stood. "Let's see the treasure you thought up." The next sound Gord heard was a sweet, seductive giggle. Then Churt answered him, "Sure, pal, but we'd better think up a tub of water real soon. This pretty little mermaid wants to have a swim before dinner." Break. And that is the end of the first short story, A Heart of Darkness. Kind of a momentous title for such a, fairy tale of a story. It really is, ends up being pretty much a fairy tale with Gord and Sure wishing their way out of it. And that, I think, though, is a kind of a good introduction to the way the original campaign was run. I really don't think it was something that most of later players would really enjoy. And yes, the comment is light fare after dealing with Tharaston, definitely. And it is a good break. I just wish we had seen a lot more dealing with more with different parts of Greyhawk, different characters, more adventures. Gord himself is not, like, for me, particularly likable or full character. I understand that he was kind of Gygax's avatar there, his little wish fulfillment character, and it is certainly a part of writing is to write what you want, but unfortunately, I found Gord, not a very well crafted character, and it would have been much more pleasant to see Gygax experiment just with. I imagine if instead of seven Gord novels, we had seven different adventures, and we could have had descriptions of dungeons and places in Greyhawk, and a combination of a story and adventure, without this overriding theme of the Tharaston, and with one character growing more and more powerful. I would have liked to have seen adventures that detailed low-level characters, mid-level characters, high-level characters, but once we started going with Gord, he quickly gained power, and we never again saw what it would be like to, go on a like a B2 adventure or beginner series stuff, expert series stuff, just instead of following this course, where at this point, beyond these short stories, what we have to look forward to are much greater power and stuff. Now, City of Hawks will be retelling the earlier adventure, but after that, we're into very super high-level land. Well, that is the end of the first short story. It's 7 o'clock. I think this worked out very well. 3 one-hour parts for our first short story. And I'm going to call up Craig, and we're going to leave for the night. Something didn't go. I know what I did. All right, I mistyped. That